Blog Talk Radio.
Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. To quote South Park, something big is happening this weekend. What is it?
Is it my birthday?
I thought your birthday was later in the year.
That'd be a shame.
Oh yeah, is it Brady's birthday? Oh wait, no, it is the greatest day of the year in NASCAR. It is the Daytona 500. It is the start of racing officially. Points will count for everything. We have everything that's happened this weekend from ARCA race, which was a hectic and a half. We have the Clash. We have qualifying. We have two locked in for the 500 out of seven, and we still have a lot more action to go, and it's not even Thursday yet.
Hey, Zach, be quiet and let me introduce everybody. Is that okay?
Oh, okay.
Okay. Hey, this is Dr. John. Welcome to the Charlotte Line. You can tell we're wired up and ready to go. It's going to be a great night as we get ready for the Daytona 500, one of the greatest things in all sports. It is the equivalent in racing to the Masters Golf Championship, and don't think the Masters is not a big deal. And so it's great that it's coming. It's great that Charlotte Line is here. And so I want to say, first of all, it's Dr. John. Glad to be here. And I can make a prediction. Captain Obvious says there's 100% better chance that Kyle Busch will win this, who will win the Daytona 500, than me. Captain Obvious has got that one locked down. Don't you laugh. Don't you laugh or I'll cut you off. I've got the board tonight. Okay, Zach Beisler, what are you doing? Good to see you. Good to have – not see you. I don't see you. I'll see you tomorrow. But it's good to have you here with us. What's up?
It is always fun. I am excited. We have racing action to go over. I am, in fact, actually watching the eNASCAR Coca-Cola iRacing Series as I'm talking to you guys. So it is even though there's not real racing on TV right now, I am still watching some sort of racing.
Well, we got to. That's great. I'm looking forward to watching some racing tomorrow night with you, so it'll be great, as I will be in Studio G. Brady, what's up? Glad to
not
have
much,
you.
Not much, just excited. Glad to be
now,
here. Glad
you,
for
what,
a race week.
You know, what are you going to be doing for 5 days in a row? You were telling me right in the green room right before we went on.
Oh, yeah, no. So since I became an official adult, you know, graduated college, moved out of my parents' place the last few years, I've taken it upon myself to take a PTO, a couple days off every year for the Daytona 500, and I just get home, you know, have a little staycation, get the adult beverages in a nice, handy reaching place, you know, the dress codes, no pants, just kind of chilling and watching some nonstop NASCAR coverage. So I can't wait. It's my favorite time of the year.
Well, that's great. Well, we're all going to have a great time this weekend. It's going to be awesome. And let's see, what have I been doing? I have been, everybody knows I'm a paranormal author. And so I've got my next to last. I'm a paranormal author. I write
You're a perennial author?
The paranormal, like Bigfoot, UFOs, and Lizard Man. And I'm almost finished with my new Lizard Man book. It will be out in 2 weeks. I got the honor to interview the great Lyle Blackburn tonight, this morning, transcribing his interview. It was wonderful. He's a super guy. He's written a lot of books. He's written a lot of movies, just super famous. And I'm glad that we met a long time ago when he was just kind of like I was, just trying to do what we could to survive in this business. It's a lot of fun. And look forward to seeing him at the next conference I see him at, but just trying to get the new Lizard Man 101 book finished. So that's what I got going on. And something else I've got on, not got going on,
oh.
I got a nice shirt on. But what I've got to do tonight while we're running the show, I am putting up the starting list for the Daytona 500 so that you and everybody, you've got to sign up for this thing by noon on Sunday to be in our fantasy racing league. And this week, all you have to do is message us, you know, do the message thing from Facebook and say, my name is whoever your name is, even if you're Kyle Busch, we'll let Kyle get into it, and put down who you think is going to win. And just message that. We'll get it, and we'll put it in our sheet, and when the Daytona 500 is over, maybe we can do a quick podcast, a little 15-minute, hey, look who won Daytona, and look who the winners are so far, or the leaders in the Charlotte Line $400 race. So we'll have to work that one out. We'll put it up on Facebook and on the webpage. But you guys can get started talking. I got to get all this lined up on the webpage and put another link on Facebook so that we can all talk about it at the magic hour of 11 p.m. I will come in and we'll start talking about it, and we'll go over the list and everything. So, guys, are you ready to start your mouths?
No, always ready.
Where are you going to take us to first?
That was the worst joke in history. All right, guys, you get started. I'm going to get everything put up, and at 11 o'clock p.m. Eastern time, I'm going to come right in and talk about the Charlotte Line 400 and tell everybody where to go to see the list. Right now, you can see it on Facebook, on the Charlotte Line, at the Charlotte Line on Facebook, but I'm going to make sure it is on our webpage so it's easy to read and everything. So you guys get started. Let me get to work. And I'll see you in less than an hour.
We will be here. So like I said earlier, it has been a start to the season already with NASCAR in Daytona. It always is a big deal. And it always starts off with some interesting races. We had the ARCA Menards Series. I always want to call it the RE/MAX Series because it was called that for so many years. We had the ARCA Menards Series racing at the High Banks of Daytona. We had quite a few big names, small names, people making their starts on the big one, including a notable female who'd been making waves the past couple years. We also had the first last turn in the Cup Series for both the Clash and the Daytona 500 pole. We also had qualifying and the Daytona Clash, which if you were in the pit road or if you were in the garage area of that race, you probably have a good souvenir because there was a lot of wrecks. But we will start, I believe we should start with some practice. How does that sound to you, Brady?
Sounds good to me. Where are we going to look at first with our practice results?
Well, let's look at just how practice was for a lot of these guys. So one thing for the first week of Daytona, there's always some practice because they qualify the Sunday before. And that means all the teams, everyone from the charters, the non-charters, part-time, full-time, even those drivers who don't make that many starts have to practice to see how their cars are going to do and to see what will happen. This also has to do with a lot of people doing drafting practice and a lot of people doing solo runs, because when it comes to qualifying, they do solo racing, or they do solo laps, I should say, I'm sorry. And they do not do group qualifying anymore, thank God. I know Brady just had a sigh of relief, like, oh, my goodness, they don't
do
that no more.
what a bad memory.
Hey, some people got souvenirs still. I mean, I'm happy about that. We do have a lot to go through with that. I am interested to see the speeds. We do have a lot of people that are already locked in. We have two drivers that are locked in already via qualifying, but one thing is with the speeds and practice, in practice, I should say, is that you always see a big difference in times. You always see a big gap. For instance, the second practice I already have pulled up. I'm still looking for the sheet. I have it somewhere. Bubba Wallace topped the second practice with a, here we go, 45.8 time at 196 with Cole Custer, John Hunter Nemechek, Alex Bowman, and Jimmy Johnson rounding off the top five. And, well, second to last, J.J. Yaley and the Rick Ware Racing was a 50.0, which is just over 4.2 seconds difference. The last person on that is actually Brad Keselowski, who I don't know if you saw, Brady, had a bit of an issue when it came to second practice. He was leaving the pits, and he clipped a spectator gate. He damaged the right side of the car all the way from the contingency panel all the way to the rear tire, essentially, and he was there all night with the crew working to get it fixed. That's a good crew, that's a good driver, but that's a bad way to start your race week on second practice, which he did not log a lap of time. He actually just pulled it straight back into the garage. Like I said, Bubba Wallace with the fastest lap on that second practice, only doing 7 laps. Not a lot of drivers in second practice doing a lot of laps. The highest was 15 with Kyle Larson. The lowest, well, right off the bat, Jimmy Johnson only doing 1 lap, more than likely a qualifying run, along with the J.J. Yaley, like I said, and a lot of drivers, only 2 drivers doing more than 10 laps, Kyle Larson, like I said, and Alex Bowman. It is interesting to look at this and see that first, your second practice, not a lot of people doing a lot of laps. You go to first practice, you have a ton of drivers who did 20 laps, 25 laps, teams of laps. Very few only did one. The only person who did one and done was Timmy Hill in the 66 roofclaims.com for BMB Motorsports. It is interesting to see the first two practice sessions and see what kind of speeds and what kind of strategy people use for this. How do you like these speeds and how do you like these numbers so far, Brady?
Well, kind of going off of your tangent there about the strategies, a lot of teams kind of look at the first practice. It's really their best test session for more of the dual races on Thursday. That's where we saw a lot of teams doing some drafting. We saw a lot more groups of cars. Most notably, we saw the 4 Gibbs Toyotas, which in the first practice, they occupied kind of that middle portion of the top 10 with Hamlin, Jones, and Truex in positions 3rd through 5th, respectively, on the time charts. But we saw them all hook up together and just kind of draft together a lot. We saw the Chevys kind of team up in tandem, Fords. And what we really saw in the first practice was just a lot of teams kind of shaking it out, kind of seeing what cars they work well with, just getting their cars used to what handling changes they have to make. Because then in the second practice, that's when they really focused on the qualifying. That was the last session that they'd have before Daytona qualifying the next day. So that was the one where they would go out, do 1 or 2 laps, you know, do a mock qualifying run, bring it back in, bring the temps down, bring the oil, everything back down to like how it would be before a qualifying run, and just started doing simulated runs. So that's why we saw a big drop off in the amount of laps there, just kind of a different mindset. But, you know, just looking at the speeds, especially in that first practice when we were seeing, you know, a lot more teams getting the benefit of the draft with these times, Ty Dillon was fastest with a speed of 203.592 miles per hour. He was 0.4 a mile an hour faster than Ricky Stenhouse, who had the second fastest lap in that first practice session where they were all kind of teamed up. But when you compare the speeds of that first practice to the second practice, that's where you can really notice the difference between the mindset there, because as you said earlier, Bubba Wallace's fastest lap time, I mean lap in miles per hour, is 196.172. That's darn near an 8 mile per hour drop off between the first practice session and the second practice session. So really, that's what you were seeing a lot, is just a lot more people kind of focusing on those single car runs, looking for that all out speed, and just really looking for what minute adjustments they would need to go to get their car from trying to turn a fast lap to a car that's going to handle well and race well in the duels and in the pack. Because another thing you got to keep in mind is these cars are on impound, which means the teams can't touch them. They can't make any adjustments on them until we go racing Thursday night for the qualifying races. So that's why these teams are really looking at these as 2 separate sessions to really know what changes they're going to have to make to get a car from qualifying trim to race trim in a hurry, because they're not going to have a whole lot of time to do that come Thursday night.
Now, that is interesting, because if you look at the times themselves, like I said, Bubba Wallace with 45.87 and Ty Dillon with 44.2. A second and a half faster, only 7 miles per hour faster. You did make the great point of, you know, the first practice is the test practice, do tandem, see what the cars can do. Second practice always is kind of a lot more of the solo run to get that mock qualifying, to see what they have to do. And it's a good thing, too, for a lot of smaller teams who are going to be fighting that bubble, and we'll get to qualifying in a second, that are going to have to race their way in or qualify on speed. It is amazing to see that the speed is still there, even though we have a different package. And you did make a great point. These cars are impounded. I know a lot of people think, well, what does that mean? It means the car, and you did say the cars can't be touched, because they are going to be racing these cars on Thursday in the duels, which will set the field for the Daytona 500 come Sunday. There are, like I said, seven cars that do not have that did not have a guaranteed spot. Two of them qualified their way in with the fastest times. Like I said, we'll get into that. I do like these speeds. I do like what I see. I do see something interesting, though, and you did point out Ty Dillon, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., two drivers who were the fastest in the opening practice session. You said the Gibbs Toyotas. Well, if we look at that, we have, you said Denny Hamlin, Eric Jones, Martin Truex Jr., Christopher Bell making his debut in not just Daytona, but with the 95 Lion Family Toyota, and Kyle Busch. All Joe Gibbs Toyotas, all brand new chassis, more than likely, all amazing drivers with skills. And the rookie, the fastest rookie of that, was Christopher Bell. It is so fascinating to see how he has picked this up. And the next fastest rookie, Cole Custer. Now, this is all draft practice, so it is much faster. But still 13th at 200 miles per hour. Then you had Brandon Poole, 19th. Kwan Hoff in the 00 at 26. Tyler Reddick making his third start ever, his second Daytona 500, and 27th. There's a lot of rookies. There are five in this race alone. I'm sorry, don't know how to count tonight. And then to see the speeds transfer over the second practice, Cole Custer jumps to the top, right behind Bubba Wallace in second. Then you have Tyler Reddick again, 11th. Christopher Bell faster in 13th than Kyle Busch, Eric Jones, and Martin Truex Jr., and even not faster than Hamlin, but not too far off. There's a lot of rookies. There's a lot of potential for some great racing from them. I think I'm really excited. I really am excited for this because we are going to see, a lot of rookies in this, four total, and we're going to see some great racing from a lot of veterans, including Jimmy Johnson, who he did pretty decent for these practices. This is going to be his air quote final Daytona 500. 24th in opening practice, second practice, he was fifth. And again, a lot of those were solos, and we did see a lot of Hendrick cars in the top eight, it looks like. Who do you feel has a stronger car for this weekend, just based off these practices? Not even qualifying, just based off the practice speeds.
You know, I really can't look too closely at the practice speeds themselves, because what I've come to notice in the last couple years at Daytona especially is it seems like you really want a car that's going to grip well and handle, and you really don't want a whole lot of raw-out speed, because it seems like over the last few years, the growing trend is if you're going to try and get your car to handle better in the draft to be a little more stable, you're going to have to sacrifice a little speed, or vice versa. If you want your car to turn that fast lap and get you on the front row of Daytona, you're going to sacrifice some of that handling and not be as stable and get eaten up once the draft starts to swallow you whole kind of deal. So really, I'm kind of looking more at the Ford camp, but especially those Gibbs Toyotas. Of the cars I saw in practice, and even in the clash race, which we'll get to in a minute, it just seemed that those cars were just so stable, and they could make really sporadic moves at the drop of a dime, whereas the Chevys and the Fords seemed a little bit more, unhinged, seemed a little bit less stable and just a little bit more sporadic in those drafting packs. But to that token, I also think that the Penske cars got to be thrown in right there with that same conversation, because the last few years, they've kind of felt like, an early 2000s Dale Earnhardt Incorporated, where it just seems like any time you go to a plate track, either Talladega or Daytona, you've got to talk about the Penske drivers, whether it be the 12 of Blaney, 2 of Keselowski, or the 22 of Logano. Those three drivers know their way around these high bank tracks and just know how to cut through the draft. And we've seen them take quite a lion's share of the plate races since about 2014. So I feel like you can't count those guys out. All three of Ryan Blaney and Brad Keselowski looking for their first Daytona 500, Logano looking for a second. And then going to the Gibbs crew, only Denny Hamlin of that group has won a Daytona 500. He's won two of them. But both Martin Truex Jr. and Kyle Busch, they have been in the sport for a long time. This will be their 15th attempt, the two of them. Neither one of them being able to take the sport's biggest race. So you know that they'll be racing with a little extra motivation. And then Eric Jones, he's shown a lot of prowess on Daytona. His first win came at the Coke Zero 400 in July. And then he also took the Clash, which we'll get to here in just a minute. So he has found a little bit of success on these high banks, and he'll be looking to maybe take an upset. So if you're going to be
looking for a safe bet, I have to say one of those seven drivers I feel like has the strongest shot based off what I've seen so far in practice and what I've seen in the little bit of racing action we've got so far in 2020.
I do like that prediction. I do like a lot of those drivers because it is a constant. That is one thing at Daytona. If you look at some people like Richard Petty, 7 Daytona 500, a record setting, the only driver to have 7. If you look at Dale Earnhardt winning his first one after 20 years, he was consistently trying. Consistency can definitely get you a lot here. I think practice, there will be two more practice sessions, I should say, this week. After the duels, teams will then be able to practice those cars again. Let's say you wreck it and you got a backup car, you will have the opportunity to still practice if you qualified for the race. So do not worry, there still will be practice before the 500 for these guys. I think practice is pretty wound up. So after practice, there was some funness called the Arca Menards Series. They had their annual race, the official kickoff for the ARCA series at Daytona Beach, Florida. The race results came in at many cars, only 11 finished on the lead lap, and a good chunk of them had some sort of tape, had some sort of coverage, had some sort of damage. The Lucas Oil 200, driven by a general tire, seen a lot of hectic problems from drivers, a lot of different people, I should say, trying some things, even a late race incident with a number two car that essentially they had to take off, the door blew off, and they had to tape on a new one, which was an interesting one, and one I hadn't seen for probably many, many years. You can actually attest to that as well, correct?
Oh yeah, no, it's been a hot minute since I've seen a duct tape door in an official stock car event. That kind of harkens back to the days of Earnhardt and Petty, you know, the glory days of the 80s and 90s. Not often you see that in the 2000s.
No. So we did have Michael Self going back to back at Daytona for Venturini Motorsports.
Not back
to back. He won. No, he won last year's, correct?
No, he won in 2018. He was looking for the defense in 2019, but he actually crashed out on lap 3 last year. So this year was a bit of redemption for him because he really thought that he was going to go back-to-back last year and had a really stout number 25. But then it all came to a head on lap 3 when his hopes were dashed. And so he was racing with a bit of chip on his shoulder this year, and he took it to the ARCA field, dominating the event, leading 61 of the 80 laps to claim his 8th career ARCA event win and his 2nd at the Daytona International Speedway. Just a really, really intense driver. If you've ever met Michael Self, really nice guy, really does a lot for his fans. And, I mean, come on. It's the Sunoco, not the Sunoco, the Sinclair car with that iconic green dinosaur. How can you not like the Sinclair car, right, Zach?
You're correct. That car is always beautiful. You were right. He did crash out. I was thinking about his crew chief, Kevin Reed, who actually went back-to-back. Venturini Motorsports did win last year's. Kevin was the crew chief for the winning car last year and this year. They also did not get any rest because there was the Arca Menards East Series, I'm sorry, getting their kickoff this week as well in CIRM, Florida. But back to the ARCA race, the ARCA Menards.
You're gonna struggle with that
Lucas
this year, aren't you?
Dude, I'm so not used to seeing something after ARCA. Other notables in there, well, obviously, second place, Haley Deegan making her first ever appearance in a super speedway. She did race at Pocono. That was kind of the biggest track she raced at, but not the consistent 200-plus miles per hour. Her family treated it as a win because not only did she finish the race on the lead lap, finishing second, the highest female ever to finish at Daytona. There was another female, Natalie Decker, racing in that, and boy, howdy, did she have an eventful night along with it, finishing 26th, starting 19th. It was an accident-plagued race altogether. Todd Moffitt, who is the grandson of Richard Petty, getting a strong fifth-place finish for DGR Crosley Ford. Another Venturini finishing third, of Drew Dollar making his super speedway debut as well. There's a lot of young guns making their debuts here, but a lot of old folks as well. We see Thomas Parrott in the 9. He is a constant in the ARCA series. He stepped back from full-time racing. He's only doing select races, including Daytona, getting a fantastic finish of 11th, a great end for him. We also had David Growler in the 28th Chevy. Finish just one lap down. Another young buck making his way up. He is going to be hopefully running full-time. It has not been really said too much if he is or not, if he's going to. Tanner Gray, who was a pro stock drag racer, by the way, NHRA champion in that, turned left, making left turns now into stock cars, doing late models, trucks, the ARCA Menard series, used to be known as the K&N series. And he's going to be running the truck race this weekend coming up, which that will be very interesting to see him run up there. Gus Dean, who also will be running the truck race, finishing 23rd after an accident. Like I said, Natalie Decker and the Seuss in the O2R Motorsports, they will be racing at Daytona as well in the Xfinity Series. And Brad Smith in the 48, a notable old-timer, been doing this for 40-plus years, doing it as long as almost Richard Petty, finishing 31st with an oil leak. Brady, did you watch this race and see how interesting it did get?
Oh, yeah, no, I was glued to my TV set for this race. It was your typical ARCA 200 at Daytona, just wild, crazy, lots of crashes, and, you know, an established ARCA driver taking the checkered flag. It's pretty much what we've come to expect from this event. And I actually had my sister-in-law reach out to me after the race and ask me why it was such a wreck-filled event. And, you know, it's really not a fair gauge of the talent level of the ARCA series, because someone would just watch this race and say, oh, all they do is crash. But that's really not the case. I mean, ARCA, on a typical weekend, week-out event, is a really entertaining series to watch. You've got a nice balance of veterans who've been in the sport for, like Zach said, sometimes 40 years, but a lot of drivers in it for 10, 20 years. But you also see a lot of the new crop of drivers like Haley Deegan or Drew Dollar, Thad Moffitt, drivers that are just now getting a start, you know, making those mistakes, finding out how to handle these stock cars and making the preparations for hopefully a jump to NASCAR. But so what I told her is that right there, that diversity is why Daytona, you see so many wrecks in the ARCA event, because when you have such a wide spectrum of experience trying to tackle a track as tricky as Daytona, it's going to bound to lead to a lot of wrecks, especially how close they've raced together. When you think of a normal ARCA race, you know, especially like a mile and a half, they get pretty spread out. There's only usually about 26 or so cars, depending on how many entrants there are. So it's not really a super big field, and they can usually have a lot more, you know, breathing room, a lot more racing space. But when you get to Daytona, with the way the draft is and how you have to pack up and really rely on the car in front of you, there isn't that margin of error that these drivers are used to. And with a lot of these drivers, you know, getting their feet wet and just figuring out how to drive these cars and what the different nuances are of an ARCA car to begin with, throwing in the fact that they now got to race, you know, 2 inches away from their nearest competitor, where the slightest mistake can cost someone a race, you know, that's just something these drivers just aren't equipped with and aren't, you know, ready to deal with. And that's why you see a lot more wrecks than what you're going to see this upcoming weekend with some of these established NASCAR teams and NASCAR drivers. And so it's really, you know, entertaining from that perspective, because you just never know what's going to happen. And we saw it on that night, drivers you wouldn't think would have a good race proving us all wrong. You know, you think of David Gravel. A lot of people wondered how his transition was going to be going from, you know, his experience being a dirt track driver, being a World of Outlaws driver, trying to translate his skills on the dirt to skills on the pavement, where we've seen it not always go so well. But he, you know, he proved a lot of naysayers wrong. He ran a solid race, was up in the draft, got caught up in a wreck not of his own making, but was able to salvage, like you said, a top 12, which is a really respectable run, considering how new this is going to be for him. Natalie Decker, even though she didn't have the result to show for it, she was running a smart race, got taken out in that same crash, really not of her own making and not really much she could do, but she showed a lot more promise and will hopefully take that momentum into the truck race this Friday and have a lot better showing than what she showed in 2019. Drivers like Thad Moffitt, who's kind of had an up and down, you know,
route into the sport. He's ran the ARCA series for the last couple of years. Kind of had a struggle, you know, finding his footing, but he's with a really good team, and this is a really good way to get that pairing off on the right foot. So good to see out of Moffitt. And then Riley Herbst will actually be shocking a lot of NASCAR fans out there. He'll be going full-time this year in the Xfinity Series. Going to skip straight from ARCA to Xfinity and run full-time the number 18 for Joe Gibbs Racing, which is a really, really stout piece to be getting your debut in NASCAR with. But he's bringing longtime sponsors Monster Energy and Orca Coolers with him. And so this was some much-needed time on track for Riley Herbst. And he had a solid night, you know, was up in the mix for most of the race and was dueling for the win in the later stages before settling for a seventh. So this is going to be some much-needed experience that he's going to bank as he's hoping to have his season get started off on the right foot on Saturday. So just a lot of good names, a lot of drivers getting really good runs, and it was a perfect way to kick off the racing season 2020. And that's why I love watching this ARCA event, because it's just so wild, so chaotic, and it really scratches that racing itch, and it's just the perfect thing to knock off the rust before we go into the one of the most grueling seasons in all of professional sports.
It is interesting you did say Riley Herbst, who will be racing for Joe Gibbs Racing in the Xfinity Series starting at Daytona. There's a lot of times, and we did talk about this a little bit last year, about how a lot of drivers will have to run this ARCA race in order to get their license to run in NASCAR. That isn't the case this year. A lot of them are getting more practice. There's Haley Deegan, who, like I said, was making her more or less her debut at the Super Speedway. Possibility of seeing her running Talladega at the end of the year is there now. We have a lot of different drivers who will be racing this weekend. Well, really about three. We have Haley Deegan, Riley Herbst, Natalie Decker, and Tanner Gray. So four drivers who will be running in Daytona at the end of this week, and whether it's the trucks or the Xfinity Series. I do love the ARCA Series. The reason being is just that there is so much to it. You know, we have this big spectrum of racers ranging from racing in the ARCA Series for 40-plus years, and some that will do it for a handful of races just to get the experience to move up into the trucks or into the Xfinity. I do love the action-packed races we get, not just at Daytona, but also Winston-Salem, Iowa. They will be at Phoenix for the very first time ever coming up this year as well, and seeing them run all over the place. They'll also be running at Road America again, which I was there 1 year when they raced, and that was very interesting, a very great race. I love ARCA because it gives a lot – you can tell a lot of drivers, upcoming drivers, because you'll see them run that for a couple years, and then you'll see them in the trucks, and you'll see them in Xfinity, and then maybe in Cup. And you'll see a lot of old-timers who just do this because they love it. I remember when I was at the ARCA race – or when I went to Road America and I saw the ARCA race there, there was a trailer – or there was a hauler, I should say, which was a short yellow bus and an open-wheel trailer. That's it. That's all they had. They didn't have the fancy hauler. They didn't have air conditioning, lounge area. All it was a short bus and a trailer. So I love this event because of that, because you get the wide variety, but it also is also a great kickoff for their season. They will be racing one more Super Speedway race at Talladega in the spring with the Cup guys and the Xfinity guys, which is always a fun race as well.
Oh, yeah, no, anytime you get these ARCA drivers on a big track, you know you're going to be in for a good time. And kind of to your point about it just being, you know, kind of almost in a way a harken back to the good old days of NASCAR, you really won't find any form of racing that will capture that kind of, you know, 70s to almost early 90s feel of NASCAR more than the ARCA series, where, like you said, you can go out into the garage area and just see flatbed trailers and people out there who were just literally doing this for the love of the sport. And I love to see that it's as healthy as it is these days. I like that NASCAR has gotten involved and, you know, helped bolster the ARCA series and kept its prominence and place as a good feeder, a good development series for NASCAR. And I look forward to many, many years to come from the ARCA series of just turning out good races and good quality drivers to work their way up on their racing ladder.
One final thing before we move on to some other funness that happened this weekend. If you ever are in Indiana, that is where the ARCA headquarters is. It's been there ever since they started racing. It's a historic little building. There's about 6 to 7 people working in there. Not like NASCAR, which has 2 massive buildings, one of them being the NASCAR Hall of Fame up here in the Charlotte area, which I will be at this Sunday, and we will talk about that later on as well. But also we have Daytona Beach, which has the NASCAR, a big NASCAR office. So always fun, great racing action. 10 cars on the lead lap, and probably 2 or 3 only had minor scrapes and bruises. Speaking of minor scrapes and bruises, let's talk about the Clash, the Busch Clash. The Clash is back. The NASCAR Clash was the Busch Clash, I should say, was called that originally, and then it kind of changed names between sponsors. It was the Budweiser Shootout. It was this. It was that. It's always been known as a race for fun. It's the first race for these Cup guys. It's not all of them. There's only 18 drivers who were former Daytona 500 winners, former pole sitters for the Daytona 500, as well as pole sitters throughout the year. If you make the chase or if you've a previous champion, you know, you are in this race. There was a lot of good racing. If you look at the lap counters, 18th place finished on 68th or 65th lap after an accident. The winning, the top 5 drivers finished all 88 laps, and after that, well, there's not much left. Eric Jones snatching that win with a beat-up Toyota. I mean, that thing is beat up. It looks pretty. It will make an interesting diecast if you're a collector. I might be buying 1 or 12 of them for myself. We had Denny Hamlin pushing him at right there at the end to get his first Clash win. It was a very interesting thing to see. Only about, 6, 7 cars left racing at the end there?
I think only 2 had no damage of, the 6 that were still racing at the finish. It was just one of the most surreal moments of racing I've ever seen in my life. And it almost answered the question that I've been asking myself since I was, a little 4-year-old who first got introduced to racing. What happens if they all crash out? Because for a second there, I legitimately thought they were all going to wreck out. I legitimately thought we were not going to have anyone finish this race because it was just an absolute wreck fest. But what was funny about it, it didn't start out that way. Really?
No.
Because the race was scheduled for 75 laps. We ended up, getting enough overtime that we went 88 when it was all said and done. But up until that first wreck on lap 66, it was mainly single-file racing. It looked like it was going to come down to some fuel mileage, maybe some pit strategy, just a very, I wouldn't say calm, but it was kind of an orderly race. The tension was definitely high, but people were kind of going about their business, were saving their equipment, knowing that it was a long race, just saving it for the end. But once we got within those last 10 laps, all hell broke loose, and it just seemed like we were just getting caution after caution. It was nuts.
So to say it like this, the first caution technically came at lap 27. It was a competition caution, no real issues. The first real caution came at lap 67 with the 22, 2, 12, 48, 11, and 18 in turn 4. And then after that, it kind of just went downhill from there. Kyle Busch finishing last on an accident that there was Kyle Busch in the accident. There's not much you really have to say about that. There was 18 cars in this field. The field was, and it started off with Ryan Newman on the pole, but it had Eric Jones, like I said, getting the win. Austin Dillon finishing second. Clint Bowyer finishing third. Kyle Larson with the fourth place finish. Ryan Newman finishing fifth. Denny Hamlin sixth. Chase Elliott seventh. Ryan Blaney in the eighth position. Joey Logano ninth. Eric Almirola tenth. Jimmy Johnson 11th. He had a couple strong moves going on there. Kurt Busch finishing 12th. Kevin Harvick the 13th. William Byron finishing 14th. Alex Bowman 15th. Martin Truex Jr. 16th. Brad Keselowski finishing 17th. And like I said, Kyle Busch finishing dead last 18th for the 18 car. There was quite a few lead changes. 14 among 11 drivers. Ryan Newman, like I said, starting on the pole, led the first couple laps. It was a fun race, and I loved it because the moment it started, I sat down and I watched it. It was fun. It was fun from beginning to end. And I know some people are going to say, well, single file racing isn't fun. They don't – all they do is go in a straight line. Well, there's so much strategy that goes into that kind of stuff. You can't just say they're going in a straight line. You are not just looking at that as a straight line. You're looking at that, okay, even if I go out, I got to hope there's five other guys that are willing to commit with me to go out to then – go around this guy to get the lead and hope that we can pull away. There were moments that there was a small group of five to six drivers who started to pull away and then started to get wheeled back in. It was a fascinating race to watch. It gives us a little bit of the hint of what the clash is going to be like, because we will be having 22 to 23 drivers per clash, so only 4 to 5 more drivers. And well, the only difference is it will be under lights. The clash was not. It was broad daylight. It was pretty. You could see the magnificent cars, and then lap 65 happened, and you didn't see how pretty they actually were after that. I loved it. The strategy that went into that, and I must say this, the last, like you said, the last 13 laps technically, well, I take that back. The last 23 laps, because there was 88 laps of the entire race, of the 75-lap race that we should have had, go figure, was hectic, but strategy as well. You had cars crashing out. All right, I'm going to get some tires. I'm not going to worry about fuel. Okay, those guys crashed again. I'm not going to worry about tires. Okay, there's another one. Oh, boy, I'm caught up in this. At the end, like I said, there was only about two drivers who maybe didn't have damage. Someone pointed out something very funny, and that was there was two drivers who came away with perfectly fine cars. That was Daniel Suarez and Daniel Hamrick. Both of them were not racing in it. Both of them were sitting in the grandstands watching. And I say it like that. Both of them did get a pole this year, and they did qualify for it, but they don't have teams that wanted to field a car for it. Yes, Daniel Suarez is in a cup ride, but you don't have to participate in this if you don't want to. I loved it because there was carnage, there was strategy, and I felt like it was a great race.
Oh, it was a great time, but one thing we need to discuss, because no one out there is discussing it, and it's really bugging me. So, I've kind of gotten a little bit, you know, I don't know how to put this. So, Austin Dillon, he's not got the best track record when it comes to the Cup Series, and I feel like he's kind of a bust. He's not the talent that I really expected him to be when he was winning championships in the Xfinity Series and the Truck Series, and he really hasn't set the world on fire like I feel like he should, you know. And Richard Childress Racing has a ton of racing pedigree at Daytona and Talladega, and for the longest time, they were the cars that you had to get through to win these races. And what I couldn't help but notice is on that last restart, of the six drivers on track, he was the only one to not get in any of those races. He had the cleanest car at the end. And in spite of all that, he couldn't keep that damn car in front of all of these absolutely trashed race cars. These race cars that look like they've gone through your local, you know, figure eight night race down at your local short track. Just beat all the piss. And here's this number three, pristine condition number three, with one of the stoutest engine packages out there, who, A, he couldn't get the restart right to get a good jump to keep the cars in front of him, because we saw several times throughout the race that if you could get your car out front and if you had a strong car, you could play the draft, you know, work both lanes and keep drivers behind you, and we just couldn't see that. And to me, that was kind of alarming, A, because does that show a bigger sign of just how down on power the Richard Childress Racing team is? And B, does that really kind of shine a negative light on the driving talent of Austin Dillon? I mean, granted, on that last lap, there wasn't a whole lot he could do with Denny Hamlin just absolutely glued to the back bumper of Eric Jones pushing him to that win, because Hamlin was a lap down anyway, and he wasn't going to win, so he's like, well, screw the rules, I'm going to make sure a Gibbs driver wins it. But I don't know, I thought that number three car had his hands way too full compared to some other drivers that I saw, you know, take the lead early in the race, seemed pretty comfortable out front.
But it just, I just felt like that with, you know, all of his competition with their hands basically tied behind their back, I felt like he should have had at least a little bit of an advantage in that last restart. But they just kind of swallowed him up, and he was kind of out to lunch. And I don't know if I'm alone on this or if you noticed that, Zach, or what were your thoughts on that?
No, I didn't notice that, and that is a great point, because Austin Dillon has two wins to his name. One of them that me and you actually watched together with our good buddy Greg, the Coca-Cola 600, which he won on fuel mileage. Still a win. He got a little bit of a burnout after that, and winning last year's Daytona 500. Not last year's, the year before, I'm sorry. It is something else to have a clean car, and I do mean a clean car, at the end of a wreck field race, especially one where, you know, yes, it's not a points race. It's a exhibition race. It's a race for you to win some money and have some hardware that not a lot of people are going to get. But you're right. And I have seen people talk about it because, you know, when you think of Richard Childress Racing, it's not like they haven't had great seasons. They've had great seasons before. They had Daniel Hemric just one season get a pole and have a decent run for Rookie of the Year. They've had Clint Bowyer race for them, get wins for them. They've had Kevin Harvick, who was with them for a very long time after we lost Dale Earnhardt Sr. You know, it does show that RCR has speed. They have equipment. It's the talent, though. Yes, he was great. And I do mean he was great in Xfinity, in trucks, in K&N, in the ARCA, of all he ran. I still feel he didn't get – I feel he jumped in too early. I feel he did need to stay in some more, and I feel that's the same with some other notable racers. One of them actually being Ricky Stenhouse Jr. He for a very long time was never won a race in the Cup Series, then got kind of back to back in the Super Speedway races. Has now switched teams. Him and Chris Buescher, you know, shared the same Roush Fenway Ford for many years together. Won championships. Won, I think, a combined of 3 championships for Roush Fenway Racing in the Xfinity Series, back then known as the Nationwide Series. I do feel that, you know, there's some drivers who move up too quick, and that affects them. You know, we don't often see drivers such as, you know, kind of like if you look at Jeff Gordon as one, and I'm a big Gordon fan, he never really raced that many races in the Xfinity Series. He did one season in Cup, didn't have spectacular, wrecked out, still won Rookie of the Year, still had some good finishes. Then the next year, boom, he was winning races. We're not seeing that now. Now, we could see that next year. We have a stout field of rookies this year coming up, and they have been winners in the Truck Series, in the Xfinity Series, champions. All 4 of the rookies that are coming up will have a great run for Rookie of the Year. Not a lot of them had a lot of races when it comes to the Cup Series. I think 3 to 4 is the most that one driver had. So I feel he moved up too quick. He doesn't want to admit it himself. And I feel like if he were to maybe step back and do the Xfinity Series some more, do some more, you know, racing and get that feeling. And I feel, too, one thing is he's not comfortable still. A lot of times you have drivers who have great talent, but they are just not comfortable with what they have, or they just feel, no, I'm not going to, you know, this guy's pushing me. I'm not going to risk it too much. I'm going to get out of his way. So finishing second, still great. He had a clean car, but Eric Jones had a car that wasn't so clean. The front bumper, you know, was tore all the hell, and he still won. From Denny Hamlin.
Well, and I go back to last year's Kansas race in the spring. That was the second race and final race last year that they ran a third car for Tyler Reddick. He ran the 500 at the 500 last year, and then that Kansas race. And in that event, Reddick was running consistently in the top 10. Challenging some points in the top 5, and eventually I think finished either 9th or 8th in that event.
Whereas his teammates, you know, Daniel Hemric and Austin Dillon, you know, they all qualified in the top 10, but those two faded heavily throughout the event and were non-factors for most of the night. And I think both of them finished well outside the top 15. And so that race to me spoke to, you know, just to still the level of competitiveness of RCR equipment. Like that to me set in stone that it's not the equipment. Like it's because he's still racing pretty top level stuff, you know, and at Richard Childs Racing, while maybe not the number one Chevy team that they once were, they're no slouch. And that to me shows that the problem is not with the equipment, it's with the driver behind the wheel. And I don't know if more experience in the Xfinity Series would help or not, because these cars are so vastly different. And I feel like you're never going to be truly comfortable in a Cup car until you get a lot more experience in the Cup car. But at this point, this will be his seventh season in Cup, and he's not had a lot to show for it. So I don't know. It's going to be hard. But I feel like I'm being personally – admittedly a little bit overly critical of Dillon this year, and I think a lot of that stems from the paint scheme he's running for next week's Daytona 500. Longtime sponsor of the number 3 and of Richard Childers, Johnny Morris, and Bass Pro Shops, they're going to adorn that number 3 in 11 races this year, starting with the 500. And man, if that paint scheme don't look damn similar to a Dale Earnhardt ripoff, you know, the more I look at it, the more I'm just like, wow, that really looks like a Diet Dale Earnhardt paint scheme. Has Austin Dillon really earned that black and silver stripe? I mean, I don't think that resume that we've been presented with is deserving of the iconic, you know, black and silver number 3 look. And that, to me, has really aided me for the last couple weeks since they unveiled that car. And then just watching that race Sunday, watching him with the cleanest car out there, not being able to hold off the field, and just, I don't know, it really bugged me, and I've just not been able to fully wrap my head around that 2 days later, and I just, I don't know, I feel like, especially with rumors that sponsors may be looking at exiting at season end with a lot of their contracts coming due, we may see a shakeup at RCR that may not involve the older Dillon. Which is also, you know, another side tangent. We've got time. Why has Ty Dillon been constantly shafted from the RCR team? Like, he's been in Cup now about as long as Austin. And he seems pretty comfortable over there at Germain Racing, but I just thought that kind of funny that why has Ty always been pushed to the side, you know?
Well, that one is he's been a driver. He wanted people to know he didn't get his equipment or where he is because of his last name is Dillon. Yes, it's not Richard it's not Childress. Dillon is not obviously that, but no, he wanted to show that he is his own driver. He is his own entity. He is not someone, you know, he wasn't gifted this ride by grandpa or this or that. He wanted to prove that, hey, I got this ride because of me and that's it. So how about we hop over to something because you did mention it, the 500 qualifying, because it was this weekend as well. It was quite a sight for speed. We have already have we had 43 cars on track. One car did not qualify. That was BJ McLeod in the 52 Rick Ware Racing Ford. Man, they're so many, and I mean this, so many great-looking cars, great-looking drivers, and two drivers are already locked in of the seven that are go-or-go-homers. We have Justin Haley, I almost called him JJ again, and Brendan Gaughan, and the look on Brendan Gaughan's face when he found out that he was locked in for the 62nd Daytona 500 in the 62 Beard Oil Chevrolet Camaro, ooh, that he truly is a man that loves racing, and he truly had a great smile on his face. Both those drivers will start the race no matter what. Justin Haley qualified 31st. Brendan Gaughan qualified 33rd. And even if they wreck out of the Daytona duel this Thursday, they will start the race no matter what because they were the fastest qualifiers. Other notables that are go-or-go homers was Reed Sorensen in the 27 Chevrolet, 34th, Timmy Hill in the 66th, 35th, Daniel Suarez in the 96th, 36th, J.J. Yaley in the 54th, 39th, and Chad Frinchum in the 49th, 41st. Those five drivers will still have to race their way in at the Daytona 500. But a big congratulations to Ricky Stenhouse Jr. getting his first pole and Alex Bowman starting second. They are set to start those positions. If they do wreck, they will go to the back of the field, but they will still be credited for those starting positions.
Yes, and kind of to expand a little bit, for if you're not familiar with the Daytona qualifying procedure, we've kind of got it in two separate shifts. So we have, you know, your typical time trial qualifying session. That's what took place Sunday morning. That's where Ricky Stenhouse turned the fastest lap in qualifying, picking up his third career Cup Series pole and walking his way onto the front row. He's going to be joined on that front row by Alex Bowman in the number 88 Chevrolet for Hendrick Motorsports. Those two are the only two positions that are set. Provided that they don't, you know, change an engine or have to go to a backup car, those two will be your front row starters for the Daytona 500. Everyone else, their positions are going to be determined by the two qualifying races that are going to be run Thursday. That's these duels that we keep mentioning. And so what's going to happen at the duels is we're going to line them up, the even-numbered position qualifiers from Sunday, so all the even-numbered times, they're going to be in duel number two. All the odd-numbered times, they're going to be in duel number one. So first, third, et cetera, that's duel one, second, fourth, et cetera. And what's going to happen is the finishing order of duel one, that's going to set the inside lane of starters for Sunday's race. And then the duel finishers in duel two, they're going to set the outside lane. What we're going to do is, and then we have those seven drivers we keep mentioning, those open teams. The top finishing driver in each duel that is not guaranteed in the race, these open drivers, they will be locked into the field. Now, where this is critical is if Brendan Gaughan and Justin Haley, if they are the top finishing open drivers in their respective duels, then their times from Daytona won't matter because they will have locked their way into the duel race. And then we'll look at the next fastest drivers from Sundays to determine who will get those two races in on speed. Now, however, if Brendan Gaughan and Justin Haley don't, you know, finish on, as the top finishing open driver, or if they crash out or have an issue, then they can fall back on their time from Sunday, like Zach said, and still be in the race on Sunday. So that's kind of where the importance is of that time trial lap. It's for the drivers who are looking to, you know, get through the duels, not have to worry about, you know, wrecking out. They could just start up front, keep their car clean. That's why they were looking to turn that fast lap at Daytona and try and get the pole. But then for those drivers in the open teams, you know, it was very important for them to try and get themselves locked in on time so they wouldn't have to worry about trying to race their way in, because anything can happen in these dual events. You literally, we could see a big wreck take out some favorites. And, you know, drivers don't like that pressure. And when you think of drivers like Daniel Suarez, you know, who has been a big name in Cup for the last few years and has a lot of backing behind him, a lot of sponsors, he did not turn a fast enough time on Sunday, so he has to race his way in. He can't, you know, rely on Brendan Gaughan or Justin Haley racing their way in and maybe making it so he can get it on time. And he has to race his way in, and that's going to put so much pressure on that young driver. And but that's why we tune into these dual races. That's why they're so exciting and why we've kept them a staple of racing at Daytona, because it just adds another layer of intensity to our big race, our Super Bowl, that you don't get anywhere else. And that is why come Thursday night, if you have nothing else going on, you better be, you know, butts glued to the couch, get your popcorn, get your pizza and your soft drinks, tuning in and watching some good hard racing, because with three drivers going home, you can't afford to be standing still on Thursday, and you got to be bringing your A game, keeping your nose clean, and just being there at the end of the race to try and see if you can race your way in to the 62nd running at the Daytona 500.
Now, like I said, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. won the pole at a 194.58. He becomes the 43rd driver in NASCAR history to win the pole. This is the third pole in 257 NASCAR Series starts and the first pole in the 16 races. This is the first pole. This is the first time JT Daughtry has a pole. This is the third one overall in the series. Their pole winner has won the Daytona. How many times has the pole winner won the race themselves, Brady?
Daytona? I have to look up
mm-hmm.
the exact number, but I know it's not
Ben.
Oh,
I have
Johnny,
the number.
No.
I have the number here. I have the number.
Oh, you have
the
number.
Last person to do it. Yes, I do.
I know the last person to do it was old Dale Jarrett in 2000, but
correct
numbers. I'm going to say maybe 8 or 9 because I don't think it's that many.
It is 9 on the dot. The most recent was Dale Jarrett, I'm sorry, in 2000. Alex Bowman will be starting second, like I said. Chase Elliott starting third. This is his 7th top 10 start at the Daytona 500. And it's highest finishing or the highest starting one, quote unquote, as of right now, is Christopher Bell, is the highest rookie to start. Like I said, rookies here, quite a few of them. There is 5. Christopher Bell being the highest at 9th. Cole Custer making his first super speedway and really his first start in the 41 for Stuart Haas Racing, qualifying 14th, Tyler Reddick qualifying 18th in the number 8 Caterpillar Chevrolet, John Hunter Nemechek, a.k.a. Front Row Joe's son, in the 38th, qualified 25th, Brendan Poole 40th, and where was that Huff, that Quinn Huff? I just saw him. There he was, and the 38th. Those guys, they are all locked in. There is no worries for them. All those rookies will start. The only driver, like I said, that did not make a lap was BJ McLeod. No real word what happened. Probably didn't pass through tech. One thing I do want to say, Brady, that you said, if these drivers do make a engine change throughout the week, they do have to start at the back. During speed weeks, you are allowed one engine change throughout because it is a lot of wear and tear on these engines to run so many laps. So they are allowed one engine change before the 500. They can do it at any point. Preferably most teams do them after the dual races. That way they have that engine. And if need be, they have a backup in case it blows during the two practice sessions. I think my favorite looking in at the qualifying for starting, for advancing to a better qualifying position is the guy in the back more. And I mean in the back, Corey LaJoie in the 32, he qualified 37th. I feel he's going to advance his position up into the top 15. Corey's a great racer. He always races clean. I feel he'll be able to use his driving style to keep it clean if he doesn't get caught up in the mess to start in the top 15. More than likely, he will be starting, let's see, he's 37th, he will start in row, what row is that? In the 18th and 19th row for the dual race. Is there an underdog you see in there in the back that will advance their way, maybe even to the top 10 to start the race this Daytona 500?
Oh, yeah, I feel like Daytona especially, you're always going to see a driver kind of, you know, that you wouldn't expect to see towards the front, pick their way through. I can think of even, you know, your favorite driver, Michael McDowell. While he may not be many people's first choice, he's a pretty underrated plate driver. Like, he's shown a lot of prowess on the high banks of Talladega and Daytona and knows his way around the draft. I think he could be a factor in whatever duel he ends up in towards the end of the race and maybe knocking on the door of a top 5. We've seen a possible 4 for that team. Wouldn't be surprised if Brendan Gaughan, you know, even though he's locked into the field, I wouldn't be surprised to see him kind of dicing his way up there towards the top 10, top 5, looking for a better starting position. So I really feel like Daytona is special in that way, that you really can elevate a team, an unknown team, like a Ryan Preece driving in the 37 this week, or Brendan Poole even, you know, just a driver that you wouldn't immediately think of. It just elevates them for a brief moment and shows off a good run that they're probably not going to see the rest of the season. And even in these dual races, we could see a driver, an open team driver, you know, completely steal the headlines, you know, make a daring last lap pass and go from being out of the show, missing the Daytona 500, you know, maybe passing someone and taking a very underfunded car to with that Cinderella story, making the field and sending some driver packing. And I wouldn't be surprised by that at all. You know, I could easily see one of those Rick Ware racing teams do it. J.J. Yaley, I could see him pulling it off. Or even Reed Sorensen in that unsponsored number 27. The potentials are limitless, and that's why you, if you have the ability, you can't miss these dual races, because there's just so many storylines getting ready to be spun and get ready to be woven in to the fabric that is going to be telling of the 60-second running of the Daytona 500 on Sunday. So I'm so excited. There's just so much potential that we could see there. And, you know, not even just the drivers in the back of the pack looking to, you know, get a good starting position. You got to look at the drivers who we think are going to be in the mix for winning these dual events and sitting in that second row. And drivers that immediately come to mind, you can't discount Chase Elliott, considering what he's done in these dual events the last couple of years, and even winning the Talladega race. We know that the Hendrick car is always fast on these high banks, and he's shown quite a bit of prowess as an up-and-coming plate driver, so you can't discount him. Denny Hamlin, he's almost shown like Dale Earnhardt-like prowess in these qualifying races these last few years, just how he's been able to maneuver that number 11 always into the thick of things, so I feel like you can't keep your eye off him. Joey Logano, same way. He's just really shown a lot of strength, especially in these shorter races, him and Brad Keselowski. So I feel like those are the drivers you got to keep an eye on, you know, in their respective dual races for the win itself. But like you said, Zach, just plenty of limitless storylines that we got to keep an eye on at the back of the pack, because you don't know who's going to pull out, you know, just a surprise finish, get a good starting position in the 500, or even shock us for those open spots trying to make the race on Thursday.
It is always interesting. So let's move a little forward too. We have talked about the dual races. One thing we should talk about before we hop into some other stuff is we do have the entry list officially for the Xfinity and the Truck Series. I sent those to you, and whole howdy are they packed. I'm looking at the Truck Series 1, 41 trucks for 32 spots, 9 go-homers. You see a lot of teams trying to make Daytona and Talladega because you only need one set of tires to really race because they last so long. And there's a lot of teams on here. There's a lot of drivers on here. And most importantly, there's a lot of go-and-go-homers and a lot of rookies on here. Mm-hmm. I think one of my favorites I see on here, entry list I have doesn't have a few drivers listed. They are officially on these teams. I think it might have just been a little late add-ons, perhaps. We have Tanner Gray, who, like I said, pro stock dragster driver turned stock car racer in the number 15, making his first super speedway start. Austin Hill coming back to Hitachi Racing Enterprises. He will also be doing some Xfinity racing for them. We'll talk about that later. Zane Smith moving from a part-time schedule in the Xfinity Series from Junior Motorsports to the 21 GMS Racing. Brett Moffitt, the Iowa boy, coming back to the 23 of GMS Racing. I love seeing that. Love seeing him. He's a great guy. Brandon Poole, like you said, doing the number 30 On Point Motorsports, doing double duty. He is one of few drivers that will be doing double and even triple duty, because if you look down a little further, you see the 40 of Ross Chastain from Nice Motorsports. He will be doing a triple duty again like he did last year. Maybe he can repeat it. Maybe he can get a win. He finished in the top 10 of all three major racing events for last year, I should say, in both Nice Motorsports, JD Motorsports, and Premium Motorsports. We pop down some more. We have Natalie Decker in the 44. Ty Majeski coming in for a full-time ride in the 45 for Nice Motorsports. We have Riley Herbst doing the 51 truck for Kyle Busch Motorsports. Stuart Friesen switching manufacturers. He went from a Chevy to a Toyota. Gus Dean in the 56 Hill Motorsports. Interesting to see him not in Young Motorsports full-time this year. Clay Greenfield, who we talked about just a week or two ago, he will have just Jeff Hammond as his crew chief. And like he said, if they win, they're going to go for a championship. Joe Nemechek and son John Nemechek will be racing in the 8 and the 87, but they will have they won't have the familiar Chevys. Instead, they'll have the Fords, a new body, because both John Hunter Nemechek will be racing full time in the 38 car, which is a Ford Front Row Motorsports. We have Jesse Little back in it in the Chevy in the 97. those are some of the odd ones that don't race that often, but we still also have like Tim Views and Mike Alfrone's Motorsports coming back. They've been gone for a while. The 04 of Corey Roper, they're going to be hoping to do a full-time season. And Cody Wampfenroof, like, there's some of these names, I tell you what. Two drivers are hoping to make a full-time run this year, possibly go for a championship. Corbin Forrester, who's been in the news for some interesting stuff in the all-out motorsports, number 7, he will have to race his way in. Also, Canadian Ralph Lesnar, who
Raphael Lessard.
Thank you. I knew someone smarter than me knew who it was. The Canadian from up north will be running full-time in the Ford truck. He has run Kyle Busch's stuff before. He does pretty decent in it. It will be interesting to see him run full-time in that. Derek Cross in the 19 of the Hill. There, nope, that's not Kyle Busch Racing. This
McAnally at Heikelman Racing.
Thank you. They don't, for some reason, have it on my list here. He will be attempting a full-time season. And his first one, and that team's first truck series full-time season, they've done a part-time schedule, really waiting on him, on Derek to turn 18 and do a full-time schedule. I mean, there's a lot of names on here. Like I said, 9 drivers going home. There is also the 28 of Brian Denson and the Firefighter NY Racing. That is a fantastic, beautiful truck that represents the New York Fire Department. It's a great truck. It always makes the race. I'm really hoping it does again this year. Looking at this, it's hard for me to say who's going to go home and who's going to race, and it will always be hard because you don't know at Daytona who's going to go home or not in the truck series.
Oh, no. The truck series is the most wide open of the three that we go into on any Daytona weekend. Like, it's just so competitive. The trucks are so loose. You can literally see them dancing around out there because they're just struggling for grip. They're so light in the tri-oval, and it's just super intense. I absolutely love the trucks as a series, but I love them so much more at Daytona. And just looking through this field, this is such a stacked field. I can't remember the last time the truck series had this many competitive teams. I mean, Kyle Busch Motorsports, GMS Racing, they both have multiple cars. Nice Motorsports fielding 3 entries. It's just a Thor Sport with their 4 entries. Just so many really, really stout, well-affiliated teams, got plenty of resources out there. And it's mind-boggling to me because I cannot think of another time, at least since the mid-2000s, that the Truck Series was this competitive. And we've got so much untapped talent there. You listed some of them earlier, but we got Todd Gilliland out there, Grant Enfinger, Ben Rhodes, Jordan Anderson. Just the names go on and on. And the other interesting thing about it is looking through this list, the only full-time Cup driver that will be racing Friday night is John Hunter Nemechek. So not only is it a pretty stacked field, it's a stacked field filled with week-in and week-out Truck Series stars, drivers who are racing for that championship. And that, to me, is going to make that race even more special because the spotlight is going to be solely on these drivers that are going to be duking it out all season long, which is where it should be. It should be on the drivers that the fans are going to be, you know, seeing week in and week out. It should be setting the stage for the drivers that are going to be dominating the championship headlines and getting the fans ready for who they're going to be seeing duking it out for a championship in Phoenix. So that, for me, has me super excited. And like you said, it's just going to be super hard to pick a winner from that. I honestly could probably, you know, throw a dart at a board and probably have just as much luck. But if I had to go out on a limb, I feel like you can't discount Ross Chastain with just the track record he had last year in the Truck Series, his track record at Daytona last year. You know, he won the Xfinity race for Colic Racing in July, top tens in all 3 February races last year. Just super stout. He takes care of his equipment. He got, you know, a little bit over the edge at the Talladega race, the Truck Series, and ended up bending his equipment. But before that, he was super aggressive, doing the kind of moves that he needed to keep that Chevrolet out front. And that's what Daytona needs. It needs a driver that has no fear, that's willing to take those risks to really drive aggressively. And that's what Ross Chastain is known for. And so I feel like, to me, he's got to be the favorite heading in there. but you can't count out, you know, established veterans like Johnny Sauter, who's a past winner of this event. You know, he had not the season he was looking for in his return to Thor Sport, so he's come in with a lot of momentum, a bit of a chip on his shoulder. He thought that he won the last plate race we ran at Talladega, ended up getting black flag, so he's looking for a little bit of redemption. I feel like he, to me, is my second strongest pick. So, I don't know, Zach, who are you kind of keeping an eye on for Friday night?
You said it best. You can throw, you can put all these drivers, all these numbers on the dartboard, throw a dart, and be right. That's Daytona. That's plate racing for you. The hard thing is just figuring out who will be able to even qualify their way in, who will be racing, and who will start where. You can start at the you could start dead last and win this race. You could start on the pole and win this race. It doesn't matter. For me, I always look at experience. I always look at luck, and I always look at what kind of equipment is being brought. One guy I'm looking at is Stuart Friesen, who switched manufacturers. He's now with Toyota. He actually has the someone alliance with the Austin Hills team. I'm looking for
Tory Racing Enterprises.
Tory Racing.
Yeah.
Yes. He has an alliance with them. Still racing the 52. He finally has kind of a breakout, winning races. He won Eldora and another race last year. Was racing for a championship. I think he's going to carry a lot of strong momentum. I feel he's going to bring a lot better super speedway truck as well. He's a gentleman who knows how to race, and it'll be interesting. He's one that I'll be interested in. Another one for me is actually going to be Ty Majeski. And the reason I say that is Ty is one of these drivers who I can't put my finger on it. But he has talent. He does a lot of late model stuff. He was a Roush Fenway development driver at one point. He was running some Arca Menard stuff in the East and the West and the regular Arca Menard series as well. Doing great, getting wins, didn't have the sponsorship to contend for a championship, but still was getting race wins after race wins. Me and you actually seen him make his debut in NASCAR at the Iowa Speedway. I actually have the banner. I have his garage banner still back home. He's going to be one I'm interested in because he worked really hard to get his opportunity to run full-time in this truck, and I feel he will be one of those drivers to really want to come out with a bang right away. He will start because that 45 has enough points, so he will be one driver I'm looking forward to and looking at to really bring the pressure and the racing for himself there.
Yep, and you can catch that race Friday night. That is the Truck Series 250 at Daytona. I believe they'll be taking green flag right around 7:30 on Fox Sports 1, so make sure you tune into that. With the Truck Series kind of recap, let's move into the Xfinity Series taking place Saturday afternoon. And, you know, I've been kind of studying the entry list for this race as well, and am shocked to find there's not a single full-time Cup Series driver on this list, which, like I said in the Truck Series bit, really, really good news, especially for the Xfinity Series. Because I feel like of the two development series, the Xfinity Series has really struggled for its own identity ever since its inception. You know, a lot of drivers ever since the beginning have come down there to harness their skills. You know, even Darrell Waltrip, Dale Earnhardt in the early days, they were coming down to run the occasional Busch race throughout the 80s and 90s. Mark Martin was a staple there. Jeff Burton, you know, just the list goes on and on. It's just kind of been, you know, the Cup Series, the junior league almost. It's really struggled for its own identity. And so this is, to me, really good news. This is going to be a field of pretty much entirely Xfinity Series regulars, drivers that are going to be going for the championship in that division. And like I said, I really like that. It sets a good precedence for any of the fans tuning in. These are the drivers you're going to see duking it out week in and week out for that championship. And to me, that's just a really great thing to see. But just looking through that list, we got a lot of good names out there. You know, we have the Stout Junior Motorsports crew. Their drivers, Justin Allgaier, Jeb Burton, Noah Gregson, and Michael Annette. Michael Annette from right here in the Des Moines metro area, a native of Iowa, so always pulling for that number one car here in the Hawkeye State. Then you got Colleague Racing, which put on an absolute clinic the last time this series was at Daytona in July. where they almost had a 1-2-3 sweep of the top three positions until AJ Allmendinger's car got disallowed. But they're bringing back all three of the same drivers that dominated that July event. You got Ross Chastain in the 10, Justin Haley in the 11, and then making one of eight starts in the 16, AJ Allmendinger. So those are going to be three really stout Chevrolets that you can't discount and got to keep an eye on throughout the event. Then you got the three Toyotas of Joe Gibbs Racing. You honestly, there's really no better equipment when it comes to Xfinity Series racing than a Toyota from JGR. So you got to keep an eye on their three drivers, Riley Herbst, Brandon Jones, and Harrison Burton. Then you got the Richard Childress, number 21 of Myatt Snyder, the 22 of Austin Cindric. Just name after name on this list of drivers that have a wealth of talent. They've got a bunch of Cup-affiliated drives out there, a lot of good, you know, engine manufacturers in this field. So honestly, I think this might be even tougher to pick than the truck series for a potential winner. But who are the kind of drivers you're going to keep an eye on in this event as we're going to be taking place with the NASCAR Racing Experience 300? What a name! Who are you keeping an eye on there, Zach?
Well, this one is a little more interesting because of the fact that instead of having a stacked field of nine drivers going home, it's 40 cars going for 36 spots. There's a lot of returning names and a lot of people who, you know, like you said, are big names. You know, we still have a lot of young guys and a lot of part-timers in there. Josh Balicki from Wisconsin doing the 99 for BJ McLeod. Chase Briscoe still in the 98. The 93 for RSS, Ryan Sieg Racing, doesn't have a driver announced. I thought they had made one. They might have, not too sure. The 92 of DGM Racing, again, same thing. They had an announcement. The 78 of BJ McLeod has Matt Millis, I believe, running for him, for them. They have a lot of the returning drivers. Yeah, so they have in the 78, Matt Millis. Matt Millis is in the 5. I can't remember who is running. I know people are going to hate me for that one. But still, let me go back to my list. I just had it. A lot of clicking over in this. There we go. Okay. You know, we still have the 74 of Mike Harmon. Brendan Brown in the 68, he switched numbers from the 86. Timmy Hill in the 66, MBM, he will be attempting to do double duty. Another driver I mentioned in trucks, Austin Hill, I did mention this. The Torrey Racing Enterprises attempting some Xfinity Series races in the 61. J.J. Haley in the 52 for Means Racing. Don't know if that's official yet or not because
it is this week.
It is official, okay.
He's
going to
run the first three races for that team.
David Starr actually moved teams and actually got a new number for Team JD Motorsports, got the number 6, and he will be piloting that full-time next year. Brett Moffitt is another driver who will be racing the O2R Motorsports Chevrolet. You know, there's a lot of great names on it. Even Front Row Joe and Jeff Green, a lot of some old-timers racing for a win, and any of these guys can do it. AJ Allmendinger is one of those drivers I'll be looking at because he's great at these plate races. He showed it, even though his car was disqualified as usual. One driver that I'm going to look at, I think this is tough, but it's a good pick, is Jesse Little. Jesse Little is going to race full time for JD Motorsports in the 4. He will be doing double duty in the truck series in the 97, which was actually a team he, quote-unquote, owned for a while, and now he doesn't own it. Someone else does, and they're going to be racing that 97 still with him being the main pilot. And Brett Moffitt are kind of a couple drivers I'm looking at for a great race and possibly getting the win, especially Brett because he is a great Chevy driver. That car, our motorsports, like you said last week, bought a lot of GMS's Xfinity stuff, so if they shut down their Xfinity program, I feel those two drivers have a lot to prove, and they want to prove it, especially right out the gate.
And so, in looking through this field, if you're, for all our fantasy listeners out there, if you had to pick two drivers from this field, do you, are those your two drivers you think are the favorites, or who do you think are the favorites for this race?
Oh, fan favorites? Oh, fan favorites going to be Ross Chastain, because he did win the Xfinity race for Colleague Racing last year in the 16. By the way, he was wearing the number 10 fire suit and a number 11 hat when he won that race. They didn't have the set. They didn't have his fire suit for that race just yet. That's a fan favorite. I think Ross Chastain and Brett Moffitt are my two big picks for it on my end.
Yeah, definitely. I'm looking in that same kind of racing shop for my two picks. I really feel good about Justin Haley's chances. He was a factor in both Daytona races last year, and I feel like with a whole year of Xfinity racing under his belt, he's ready to get that first Xfinity Series win. Thought he had it in 2018 when he got disqualified for going below the yellow line at the July Daytona race, so looking for a little bit of redemption. So I think he's my number one pick, but for another just good, solid pick, I got to go with the 7 of Justin Allgaier, just because Junior Motorsports as a team is so good at the Xfinity Series level at Daytona, and they've won so many races. And Justin Allgaier, he's one of those drivers I feel like doesn't get enough credit for his plate racing ability because he doesn't have the statistics to back it up. He usually is a victim of circumstance and usually gets taken out of races. But when he can put together the full race, you know, steer clear of trouble and get that 7 Chevrolet out front, there's no one better at Daytona plate racing in the Xfinity Series level. So I really feel like this might be Justin's year. He didn't have the year he was looking for last year, fell off immensely from the statistics he put up in 2018. So he's looking for a bounce back. And I know for that team, Junior Motorsports, there's no better place that they like to win more than at the high banks of Daytona. So I feel like you got to keep an eye on that 7 Chevrolet, but just a stacked field throughout. And honestly, any one of these drivers, if they win, it's going to make for a really good storyline, because the fact that we have no Cup drivers entering, it's going to be an Xfinity Series only driver, a driver trying to make that name for themselves, that's just going to make for good headlines when we get to recap the events on next week's podcast next Tuesday.
Absolutely.
Oh,
next week's.
Yeah.
Let me jump in here. We only have about 2 minutes left, and I wanted to tell everyone the current list of qualifiers is up on the website, thecharlotteline.com. And just send us a message on Facebook. I put a link. It goes right to our Facebook page. Send us a link, a message, with your name and your pick for Sunday's Daytona race. Now, you got to get it in before 12 o'clock noon Eastern time. That should do it, shouldn't it, guys? 12 o'clock noon Eastern time?
I think that should do it.
Okay,
yeah,
and we'll see.
The race will start. Yeah.
Start what?
I believe the race will start just after noon. So if you don't have your picks in by then, we will know because we will be keeping track of that. I still think I'm going to win. Kyle Busch is not going to win. I'm just going to say that as usual.
We'll see.
I don't know. I feel like Dr. John might be onto something here. I feel like that 18 Toyota is looking for that first 500 win as well. I feel like Dr. John might be onto something with that pick.
Psychic Dr. John might be onto something. I don't know if Dr. John is, but yeah. So it'll be great. And you know, guys, as always, it's been a really super podcast with you guys. And so we got all that up on the website like it should be. And we're going to have a great time this weekend. Now, Brady, we're jealous of you because you're going to be staycationing for 5 days, and I'm going to be out on the road.
Oh, yeah, there's no better way.
Promoting events, but I'll get to go to Studio G tomorrow and see Zach, and we're going to have a great time. So from all of us to all of you at the Charlotte Line, have a great Daytona weekend, and we'll see you next week, 10 p.m. Eastern time on the Charlotte Line.
Woo! Have a good week, everyone.
Bye, y'all.
Go, Gordon.